I wish I'd killed you when I first saw you here, Orinthen said. Us standing here talking about sunsets when you had this waiting for me. You and your damned conclave. Gao spread his arms, opening himself. Kill me, Chan. It won't save this colony. It won't stop the conclave either. Nothing you can do will stop the conclave from taking this planet or the next or the next. The conclave is 400 peoples. Every race who fights against it fights alone. The Wa'id, the Ra, the Fran, the humans, all of the others who have started colonies since the agreement. If nothing else, it's a matter of numbers. We have more. One race against one other race is one thing. One race against 400 is quite another. All it will take is time. Orinthen turned away from Gao and toward his colony, bathed in light. I'll tell you something, Orinthen said to Gao. You might find it ironic. When I was chosen to lead this colony, I warned the Atafwe that you would come for it. You and the entire conclave. He told me that the conclave would never form and that you were a fool for trying and that I had been a fool for ever listening to you. There were too many races ever to agree to anything, much less a grand alliance. And that the enemies of the conclave were working too hard to fail. He said the humans would stop you if no one else did. He thought highly of their ability to set everyone against each other without getting involved themselves.
He wasn't far wrong, Gao said. But the humans overreached. They always do. The opposition they created to counter the conclave fell apart. Most of those races are now more concerned about the humans than they are about us. By the time the conclave gets to the humans, there may not be many of them left.
You could have gone after the humans first, Orinthen said.
In time, Gao said.
Let me put it another way, Orinthen said. You didn't have to come here first.
You were here, Gao said. You have a history with the conclave. You have a history with me. Anywhere else, and there would be no question that this would begin with destruction. Here, you and I have a chance for something else. Something that will matter beyond this moment and this colony.
You've put a lot on me, Orinthen said. And on my people.
I have, Gao said. I'm sorry, old friend. I couldn't see any other way. I saw a chance to show people that the conclave wants peace, and I had to take it. It's a lot to ask of you, but I am asking you, Chan. Help me. Help me save your people, not destroy them. Help me build peace in our part of space. I beg this of you.
You beg me, Orinthen said, his voice rising. He advanced on Gao. You have 412 battleships pointing their weapons at my colony, and you beg me to help you build peace? Ha! Your words mean nothing, old friend. You come here peddling that friendship, and in return for it, ask me to exchange my colony, my loyalty, my identity, everything I have, at the end of a gun, to help you provide the illusion of peace. The illusion that what you do here is something other than simple, raw conquest. You dangle the lives of my colonists in front of me and tell me to choose between making them traitors or killing them all, and then you suggest to me that you're compassionate. You can go to hell, General.
Orinthen turned and stalked away, putting distance between himself and Gao.
That's your decision, then, Gao said, some time later.
No,
Orinthen said, still facing away from the General.
It's not a decision I can make on my own. I need time to talk to my people, to let them know what their choices are.
How much time do you need? Gao said.
The nights here are long, Orinthen said. Give me this one.
It's yours,
Gao said.
Orinthen nodded and began to walk away.
Chan,
Gao began, walking toward the Wa'id.
Orinthen stopped and held up one of his massive paws to silence the general. Then he turned and held out his paws to Gao, who took them.
"I remember meeting you, you know,"
Orinthen said.
"I was there when the old Atafwe received the invitation to meet with you and every other race who would come to that damned cold rock of a moon you so grandly called neutral ground. I remember you standing at that podium, saying welcome in all the languages you could croak, and for the first time sharing your idea of the conclave with us. And I remember turning to the Atafwe and telling him that without a doubt you were absolutely and totally madhouse insane."
Gao laughed.
"And then afterward you met with us, as you met with every embassy there who would hear you,"
Orinthen said.
"And I remember you trying to convince us that the conclave was something we wanted to be a part of. I remember you winning me over."
"Because I wasn't truly madhouse insane,"
Gao said.
"Oh, no, General."
"You were," Orinthen said.
"Entirely and completely. But you were also right. And I remember thinking to myself, what if this mad general actually pulls it off? I tried to imagine it. Our part of space, at peace. And I couldn't. It was like a white wall of stone in front of me, keeping me from seeing it. And that's when I knew I would fight for the conclave. I couldn't see the peace it would bring. I couldn't even imagine it. All I knew was that I wanted it. And I knew that if anyone could bring it into being, it would be this mad general. I believed it."
Orinthen let go of the general's hands.
"It's so long ago now," he said.
"My old friend,"
Gao said.
"Old friend,"
Orinthen agreed.
"Old indeed. And now I must go. I'm glad to have seen you again, Tarsem. I truly am. These are not the circumstances I would have chosen, of course."
"Of course,"
Gao said.
"But isn't that the way of things? Life surprises."
Orinthen turned again to Gao.
"How will I know when you've reached a decision?"
Gao asked.
"You'll know,"
Orinthen said, not looking back.
"How?"
Gao asked.
"You'll hear it,"
Orinthen said, and turned his head back to the general.
"That much I can promise."
Then he turned back and walked to his transport, and with his escort drove away. Gao's lieutenant approached him.
"What did he mean when he said you'll hear his answer, General?"
he asked.
"They chant,"
Gao said, and pointed toward the colony, still under spotlight.
"Their highest art form is a ritualized chant. It's how they celebrate and mourn and pray. Chan was letting me know that when he's done talking with his colonists, they would chant their answer to me."
"Are we going to hear it from here?" the lieutenant asked.
Gao smiled.
"You wouldn't be asking that if you'd ever heard a Waidi chant, Lieutenant."
Gao waited the long night, listening, his vigil occasionally interrupted by the lieutenant or one of the other soldiers offering him a hot drink to keep him alert. It wasn't until the colony's sun rose out of the eastern sky that Gao heard what he was listening for.
"What is that?"
the lieutenant asked.
"Quiet,"
Gao said, and waved his annoyance. The lieutenant backed off.
"They've begun their chanting,"
Gao said a moment later.
"Right now they're chanting a welcome to the morning."
"What does it mean?"
the lieutenant asked.
"It means they're welcoming the morning,"
Gao said.
"It's ritual, Lieutenant. They do it every day."
The morning prayer rose and fell in volume and intensity, continuing on for what seemed to the general a maddeningly long time. And then it came to a ragged, hesitant ending. Gao, who had been pacing through the latter parts of the morning prayer, stopped stock still. From the colony came a new chant, in a new rhythm, growing progressively louder. Gao listened to it for several long moments and then slumped, as if suddenly tired. The lieutenant was at his side almost instantly. Gao waved him off.
"I'm fine," he said. "I'm fine."
"What are they chanting now, General?" the lieutenant asked.
"Their anthem," Gao said. "Their national anthem."
He stood up.